Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. We're going to talk about two important subjects on the broadcast today. First half of the hour, we're going to talk with Emily Bells from World Magazine. Emily has written a follow-up story. I say a follow-up story. It's following the story about Hobby Lobby and the Supreme Court's ruling about Hobby Lobby recently. Well, a follow-up story to that is that nonprofits win contraceptive mandate reprieve. In other words, the ruling with Hobby Lobby is having some very good consequences flowing out of that, and we'll talk about that in just a couple moments. On the second half of the broadcast today, we're going to talk about something that's very timely as well, and that is the what's taking place with Israel. And in even more specifically, we're going to talk with an author who has written a book entitled Making David into Goliath, and the way that Israel has been kind of maligned over the last number of years, where at one time Israel was, you know, was thought of very well by the international community, but now we see so many have turned against Israel. And so his book called Making David into Goliath, How the World Turned Against Israel. That'll be our topic on the second half of the program. And Joshua Muravchik, that's what it is, Muravchik, is going to be with us in order to talk about that subject on the second half of the broadcast today. First up, Emily Bells, in her article, the opening line says this: right before July 4th holiday this weekend, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a significant order that escaped much notice. It granted Wheaton College, the best-known evangelical Christian university, an emergency injunction against the contraceptive mandate. Injunctions from the Supreme Court are quite rare, and the injunction established a pattern for other nonprofits seeking injunctions while their cases are pending. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, in a dissent, called the order, quote, as rare as it is extreme. Well, let's talk about this particular subject, about this reprieve that was issued by the Supreme Court, and just how rare it is and just how important it is. Joining us now is Emily Bells from World Magazine. Emily, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Emily, why don't we start with just refreshing people's mind maybe about the Hobby Lobby case and what took place there, since that is really the foundation of this story and the ramifications now going forward from that ruling from the Supreme Court.
Right. So back at the end of June, the Supreme Court ruled that for-profit corporations like Hobby Lobby that are owned by, you know, a religious family have religious freedom protections under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So that answered questions about the for-profits, but then, you know, the next question was, do nonprofits have protections like Hobby Lobby does? Hmm. So that's kind of the issue that we're all thinking about now.
Hmm. Just to refresh people's mind, that was a 5-4 decision. There were two decisions that were made of significant decisions that day, I think, that were released. One was the decision concerning Hobby Lobby and the other plaintiffs that had joined them as well. And the second decision was a decision about unions and whether unions could extract dues In that particular case, the incident was that a mother was taking care of her child at home. She was, I believe, a home health care worker. Her child had some sort of illness or disease that she was treating at home, and the unions wanted her to pay dues for taking care of her child in the home. That passed by a 5-4 decision from the Supreme Court. Get that, 5-4. Of course, the other one that we're talking about here is Hobby Lobby, which was 20 different contraceptives were mandated as part of the insurance that Hobby Lobby would provide. Hobby Lobby had problems with 4 of those mandated drugs because 4 of them were basically abortifacients. Is that how I said? Yeah, they would cause abortion. And so they weren't willing to provide those, just 4. So 16 others they were willing to provide. And that also passed by a 5-4 margin from the Supreme Court. I stress that just to say this, just how radical the court really is, that both of those two things are very reasonable decisions. And I just find it shocking that both of those were almost lost. It was only 1 vote. And so I find that to be significant. How about yourself?
Well, I think people were thinking that, you know, we've had a lot of unanimous decisions from the Supreme Court this term, and people thought maybe they're all getting along, but, you know, these two rulings showed that they're really not. They're still just divided as they've always been, very much along conservative and liberal lines.
Yeah, when you've got Justice Sonia Sotomayor in this case, you know, making this statement about this is rare and extreme, that this is an extreme position that has been taken by her fellow justices, I'd just like to remind people, especially here in South Carolina, that voted for Lindsey Graham and now have given Lindsey Graham, basically, he's still got to win the actual election, but there isn't much opposition. You know, that he voted for Justice Sonia Sotomayor, said that, you know, the president had recommended her and that elections have consequences and so forth. Here she is calling this an extreme case that they're doing here, where they just granted an injunction to Wheaton College and others. So I just like to remind people, especially fellow evangelicals that were pushing so hard for Lindsey Graham to be elected, you know, remind them of just how radical Sonia Sotomayor is in these situations. Let me go back to your article then. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, the order answered some questions that hung in the balance about these nonprofits. Deal with that a little bit about what was still hanging out there unresolved that needed to be, that a reprieve needed to be issued by this U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, so it's a complicated issue for religious nonprofits who object to the contraceptive mandate. What the government has done has said, we're going to give you this accommodation, which is you sign a form that says you object to these contraceptives, and that authorizes your insurance company to cover the contraceptives for your employees. So Wheaton said, you know, this essentially makes us guilty as providing these abortifacients to our employees by signing this form. So they objected to the form. The Supreme Court said, you know, we agree, you don't have to sign the form. The fact that you filed a lawsuit is notice to the government that you object to the mandate. And so now the government has to figure out, if they want your employees to have contraceptives, the government has to figure out how to do that. But Wheaton has no responsibility to be involved in that.
Now, where does that part stand? We heard about the part of the ruling where they told them, you know, there's other ways for you to go about providing this. Has the government said, you know, how they're going to try to go about doing that?
No, I mean, this just happened. And if you think about how long it took for the government just to issue its decisions on providing this original accommodation with the form that Wheaton would fill out. I mean, it was years that it took them to figure that out. I would guess that it's going to take the federal government a long time to decide what it's going to do in this situation.
Mm.
So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Some people are asking, I saw this out on One News Now, but they were asking, you know, after the ruling on Hobby Lobby, can the president really push ENDA? Has the ruling from Hobby Lobby in the Hobby Lobby case, has it made a significant impact on the president's agenda to, you know, push these types of policies that he's been, you know, so far so strongly behind up until just recently?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the court reporter. I don't follow the politics side as much, but I do know that as a result of Hobby Lobby, the Senate has tried to introduce a bill to counter the Hobby Lobby decision, and I know a number of gay rights groups have withdrawn their support for ENDA because it has too big of a religious exemption in it. Mm. So I think, you know, probably it's not going to matter in the long run because there's a Republican House, but you know that there have been some ripple effects from the ruling.
There were some people that were saying because the dissent on the Hobby Lobby vote was so verbose and so aggressive in the dissenting statement that was issued, that it may actually work against the groups that are trying to limit the scope of the ruling, because in the dissent, the justices were basically saying that the ruling was much broader than what people were interpreting or what the plaintiffs were actually asking for, and therefore would have a broad scope and changing judicial rulings and maybe policy and other things as well as a result of the of this ruling that came in the Hobby Lobby case. And many people were saying that that dissent and the dissenting statements that were made there were actually then going to be work as a boomerang against the left, because they would be able to point to those words to say that even the dissenting justices felt that it had a broader scope to it, and this would work against them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. I guess in terms of how courts would rule in the future, they only use the majority opinion as their guiding principle. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't use if you were writing an opinion in a court, you wouldn't quote from a dissent.
Mm.
So I don't think it would necessarily be used in courts, but I guess it could be used just in, you know, how we think about it outside the courtroom, that it's a broader ruling than you might think from just reading the majority opinion.
Now, so far, then, this ruling and this reprieve that was issued affects Wheaton College, but does it has it already gone broader than that?
Yeah, the Wheaton College injunction is a really big deal. It's a big deal for all the nonprofits who have cases pending right now, because essentially what the Supreme Court said was, all you have to do is file a lawsuit in order for us to give you an injunction against the contraceptive mandate.
Mm.
So that pretty much tells all the lower courts, if a nonprofit objects to the contraceptive mandate, you have to give them an injunction while their cases are pending.
Mm.
So that is a really big deal, because the nonprofit cases are really divided in courts. The courts don't really know what to do with them right now. So the Supreme Court made a really clear statement on that with this order.
Hmm. You mentioned in the article that Wheaton was certainly celebrating the injunction, but some of the other law firms and spokespeople for other nonprofit organizations that were being represented by other groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom and so forth Were they as celebratory about this injunction as Wheaton was?
Well, they've been really quiet about it. They haven't been doing, like I said in the article, they haven't been doing interviews. I think that, you know, the court's order was a little surprising, and it's kind of a new idea for the law firm. So I think that they're processing it and trying to figure out how they're going to react to it. But since we published the article, I've seen a couple other nonprofits who have cases. They're really excited about what the Supreme Court did. So I think generally there's excitement, but the law firms are, you know, trying to piece this out and see, you know, are we going to change our strategy going forward? Are we going to try to find a more middle ground solution here? Or are we going to, you know, stick it out to get the fullest exemption we possibly can? Mm. So I'm sure there's some division there over what the next steps will be.
So not only was the fact that the Supreme Court issued this type of an injunction like this, but also that there was a 15-page dissent that went along with it from Sotomayor, and which Ginsburg and Kagan joined in to that dissent. Let me just read a quote here from that dissent for our listening audience. It says this: because Wheaton is materially indistinguishable from other nonprofits that object to the government's accommodation. What a way to put it, the government's accommodation. The issuance of an injunction in this case will presumably entitle hundreds or thousands of other objectors to the same remedy, she wrote in a footnote. And so there's that statement where she's concerned about the scope of this type of an injunction and, you know, concerned that this is going to affect these many people. Well, if the ruling from the Supreme Court, it has consequences as to what people do with the law, why should we, you know, why should she be so down in the dumps here about that it's going to have an impact on other rulings as well? I mean, that I would assume that happens with a lot of cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's right that this order is going to have an impact on thousands of cases. Of course, her point is she wishes it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing to keep in mind here is that this is just an order and not an opinion from the court, which so these cases are all still live in the lower courts. Wheaton's case will still have to be decided by a lower court. So, you know, this is kind of just the next chapter in the long novel that is the legal challenges to, to the contraceptive mandate. So, you know, I think the order sketches out how this might play out in the next few stages of legal challenges, but so that's why Sotomayor is so concerned, because she thinks, you know, this is how it's going to go in the future, but it's not the final word yet on nonprofits, but it's definitely an encouraging one for them.
Do you think that the court is increasingly becoming politically involved, you know, that now she feels the need to issue this 15-page dissent on an order given like this by the court? Or is the fact that the court issued this type of an order, which you're talking about as being rare, that they do it? Are these signs that maybe they're getting, you know, drawn into the political aspects of these things rather than just deciding on the merits of the law?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. The order is rare. The 15-page dissent to an order is very rare. But, you know, from the majority's perspective, which, by the way, probably included liberal justice Stephen Breyer, they saw this as so important that Wheaton not have to comply with the mandate that they issued an injunction. So I think they saw it as an emergency, as something that they had to respond to immediately. And so, you know, I guess this is where judicial philosophy comes into play. Do you think, you know, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is a very important law that has high standards, or do you think, you know, as Sotomayor said, you know, it's not that big of a deal for Wheaton to sign the form and just deal with it while the case is pending. So, you know, there's just a division in how the law is viewed between the justices on this point.
You mentioned the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That was the act that was the basis of the ruling, correct?
That's right, yeah. And I think a lot of people were disappointed that it wasn't based on the Constitution. It was based on, you know, this law that passed back in the 90s, which, you know, it's not as firm of a foundation as, you know, basing it on the First Amendment or something.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of the way that the case was presented before the Supreme Court? And we should remind our listening audience that Religious Freedom Restoration Act was passed by Congress in an extremely unified, bipartisan way. I think it was back in 1993. And I think there were only 3 votes against it in Congress. And it was signed into law by President Bill Clinton during that time. And so you've got that is what was used by the justices as the basis for this Hobby Lobby ruling. Get this, that then candidate Hillary Clinton, she hasn't officially declared, but candidate Hillary Clinton then was saying that this was a tragedy and, you know, that this was so bad. She was basically, if we could take it this way, arguing against her husband's own law that he put into place. So it really made for some strange bedfellows on this one, huh?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was actually passed in response to a Supreme Court ruling which rolled back religious freedom protection. So it's interesting, this, you know, it's just back and forth between Congress and the Supreme Court over, you know, defining those boundaries of religious freedom. But, yeah, Democrats who used to support that law are now, you know, not as enthusiastic about it.
Mm-hmm. These are the types of battles, you know, the hills that we should be willing to die on. When you're talking about religious freedom in this country this particular case having such broad ramifications, these are the types of ones we really need people to sit up and take notice and see what's taking place. These are vitally important because it's we talk about slippery slopes and so forth. But boy, it's you start getting mandated that you have to take the life of an unborn individual, take somebody else's life, and that if you don't want to do it yourself, that's fine, but you're going to pay for somebody else to do it, whether you like it or not. Those types of things, wow, that's this starts to get really concerning when these types of things are mandated. So I was so pleased to see the ruling, and I'm even more pleased now to see that it's having broad ramifications, and I hope it's the beginning of the end of that type of effort being made by the government to coerce people into doing things that are against their conscience or against their religious convictions. So I was very pleased to see it. Emily, thank you so much for writing about these things and bringing these things to the forefront. It really helps us, especially this one that was really under the radar for it to be done right around the July 4th weekend. I didn't know of any other news sources that were covering it. So I appreciate the work that you're doing and the work there of World Magazine.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Okay. That was Emily Bells again, and you can read Emily's story out on www.worldmag.com. You can go out there. The title of the story that we were referring to is Nonprofits Win Contraceptive Mandate Reprieve, the Supreme Court's Order Blocking the Contraceptive Mandate for Wheaton College is rare, and wide-reaching. That's the subtitle of the article out there. It was just posted yesterday to World Magazine, so go on out there and read this story. As I was mentioning, this is one of the few places that you'll find writing about this particular subject. Again, that's worldmag.com.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.